Major Hogan, Reel 3.
Yeah, Pam Hill died in September, told us to come back at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he'd tell us what the long-range jungle penetration group was all about. We were not known then as Chindits. We were the long-range jungle penetration group. However, reported 9, and he told us that we were, the job was all about, that if we think we couldn't do it, or we didn't want to do it, we could walk away. I don't remember sleeping that night. I don't remember eating. Petrified that one would be sent behind the lines. And he emphasized that if you were wounded or sick, you could be left behind. There was no obligation on the part of the fit men to carry you, because we would hold up the column. Of course, there was to be no communication with your friends or relations and tell them what you're doing. It's a secret. I think we were sworn to secrecy before he started the talk with us. I'm not quite sure. But it was frightening. And then that night in the mess, I can't remember his name, but he had done the first expedition. He was a major. And he had done part of the second expedition, had been wounded and had been flown out. But he wouldn't give any details. All he said was, you are young, you are fit, you are Burmese speaking. You owe it to your country. So I went next morning, told Captain Hill, okay, I'm in. And the other two did the same. And then we started our jungle training in earnest. And believe it or not, I won't mention names, but one of the other two, the joke was he had a foot on his blister. He's blistered from toe to heel. I've never seen anything like it in my life. Anyway, the doctor recommended he couldn't. There's something, his skin was one layer short or something. And he, very disappointed, he packed it in. He had to pack it in. And next thing, we were flown off to Sylhet, where it rained and rained and rained and rained. Sylhet is one of the wettest places in the world, near Cherrapunji, nearly 300 inches a year. And everything floated away. You were not told about this. This is all part of your training. And the next morning when you got up, believe it or not, your boots were mildewed because of the dampness, humidity in the air. However, collected your stuff, cleaned it. Before I could see Jack Robertson, about 4 o'clock in the evening, you're flying into Burma. And that was it. Your Dakota.
Had Wingate come round whilst you were doing the training?
Not then, no. He did come around when we were... Yes. He was around, he was everywhere. He was due to come to the Burma Rifle Officers' Mess one night for a dinner. I remember I was duty officer. And General Wingate's not here, General Wingate's not here. I said, anyway, I was duty officer, I'll slip out and go and have my meal in separately, but I couldn't wait. And I go and do on my rounds, and I went on my rounds there to find General Wingate getting back into his jeep and driving away from the animal transport lines. And I can't confirm this, but apparently the next day he wrote to say that the animal transport lines were not up to standard, and therefore he wasn't going to eat with the officers who couldn't look after their mules, or words to that effect, anyway.
Whereabouts was that?
In Ranchi, on the jungle training. Yeah. He was very hot on the animals got to be looked after.
But
of course, I was only a second lieutenant then and duty officer, and all I could see is the back of him, and I rushed back to the mess to tell the colonel, which was Peter Buchanan, that and Malcolm Freshney, who's died recently, was the second command, to tell them that, hey, I've just seen General Wingate leaving the mule lines.
So your jungle training was in the Ranchi area?
Ranchi area, Sorga, Ranchi, all down in the hills there.
What did you think of the training that you received?
It was hell. It was tough. It was really tough. I don't know about the other battalions, but we did everything on the double. Everything. As soon as you left your tent, you doubled there. And, of course, part of the training was no boots for about 2 or 3 hours a day to get your feet hardened just in case you lost your boots.
Did you think
Sometimes we'd only, just for no rhyme or reason, one water bottle for the whole day. And it was sweltering hot there in central India. It must have been 110 degrees in the shade, I think. And, of course, map reading, unarmed combat. We were on the go from 6 o'clock in the evening till, well, the whole time, really. Till evening meal and then to bed at night and then up again at 4 or 5 in the morning.
Was it good preparation for what was
going on? Oh, yes, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Had we not had that training, that discipline, many, many more of us would have fallen by the wayside. And I think, without being cruel, the chaps who did fall by the wayside were the blokes who thought it was a load of bunkum whilst we were in the middle of India, safe, and didn't take their training seriously, their map reading, their... For instance, I mean, you go to the loo, go in pairs, backs to the column, so many paces out, dig your hole, do your business, cover it up, about turn, march back. They wouldn't listen there. There are many a chaps who never came back. They'd either go this way or that way or just turn around. If they had done what they were trained to do, they would have come back to the column. How? They never came back. Some of them just never came back. And if a column moved off, it just moved off. Because it just couldn't wait for one man or two men. And many a time they've gone to the toilet and not come back. And I know in some cases where they caught up with us a week later. You see, quite a number of the British boys had never seen jungle. Their holidays were at the seaside. They drove past little woods going through Kent, Kent countryside. But to see those jungles that went on for mile upon mile, and they just lost direction. And there was no sun to guide them, because the sun was... couldn't see the way the sun was. Another thing was water discipline. Some chaps would not listen when you say, just take a sip of water, put a pebble in your mouth. If you've got a signet ring, put it in your mouth. No, they would take a mouthful of water. Of course, when evening came, when you could brew up a cup of tea or mash your K-ration biscuits to cook, they had no water. Say what you like. their friends, who were not obliged to, but they did share their water. Therefore, they weren't shot. And this was a... And if I caught anyone doing that, which I did from time to time, I would not let him share his water. Which sounds cruel now, but at the time, you had to do some of this to get them into line. And of course, the other thing was being clean and tidy in your person. Tidy in that when you undressed at night, you kept everything in the same place, in the same order, so that in an emergency one could get dressed. Or, as I said at night, don't take your boots off. Loosen your laces, but tie the knot. Don't leave the lace flying around in case you have to move out. You've got everything to hand. And on the whole, this was drummed into people and they did take it on. But of course, there was the odd Mr. Know-All who eventually, I think, they suffered by getting lost or going short of food and water.
Now, I interrupted you with you going to Sylhet and going in, about to go into Burma. If you could pick it up from there, please.
I'm not quite sure, but I think it must have been about 10, 11 o'clock at night. Got to the airstrip, pitch black, raining as usual. Orders being shouted. I think we were given a code name, I'm not quite sure. And the next thing is a sergeant came along, called out a name or a number, I'm not quite sure, and all of us who had that filed off after him, introduced Dakota, and if you have been in a Dakota with ammunition boots, and up those two or three metal stairs with no handrails, with a 50-pound pack, a Sten gun, hand grenades, water bottle cookery, haversack. It's one hell of a job getting on board. And then when you step into a Dakota again, ammunition boots on a aluminium floor at that incline, it's quite a job keeping one's dignity and getting everyone sat down in the little bucket seat, admin bucket seats, which folds up, and then try and strap yourself in. Very little light in the Dakotas, but we managed, and we took off, pouring with rain. I'm a Christian. I've always prayed. My God, I prayed. I prayed the plane wouldn't take off. To be quite frank, I prayed the plane wouldn't take off because of the weather and that the whole aerodrome would sink deep in. However, we did take off, and the drone of this Dakota engine, everybody's a lovely drone. To me, they said all sorts of things. And watching my platoon, the faces of the men, young, some hardened soldiers, but everyone, I think, scared of the unknown of what's going to happen when we get down there. Anyway, down we came. Jump out of the aircraft. There were guides there to lead us. Whoever was on the ground did a very good job of work. And straight to a defensive position on the airstrip. More or less, I think it was the left flank, given about four men per slit trench.
What was this place?
Blackpool. The next morning, the same sergeant was back. I think he was from the Cameroonians. Yes, he was a Cameroonian. And he Gabor Enciu's The Field of Fire situation report on where the Japs were. They were on the other side of the aerodrome, and if they attacked, they might come here, there, and there were the water points, etc. And I must tell you a story. There was a dead keen young second lieutenant who had come to the Burma Rifles. He had volunteered in England here to come to the Burma Rifles because his great-grandfather was out in Burma during the Burma Wars, the Burmese Wars, I think. And he came along dead keen to go into action. Where are the Japs? Where are the Japs? We must go and look for them. And that same night, the Japs attacked us. And not being vulgar, the poor chap got shot through the penis into the right testicle, and a bullet lodged in his right thigh. First night of action. And, of course, he was flown out. And I never got to see him again. I'm so sorry. At that time, I suppose, young and callous. I never followed up where he is. Even till today, I would love to meet him again. Whether he was Ernest Lee or Lee Ernest, even, I'm not quite sure. But he had come to the Burma Rifles because of his background, and he was taking Burmese tuition from one of our governor's commissioned officers, dead keen to see action, and the very first night he gets wounded, all in the wrong place. But I wish I could meet him again. Next day I was called, next day or two, I'm not quite sure, by Brigadier Jack Masters, who had taken over from Brigadier Lentain. Jack Masters was really the brigade major. He was a Fort Gurkha. And given the job of taking a patrol of the King's Own Regiment, 41 Column, out of Blackpool, across the Nam Quin Chowne, up the hills there, to meet the Nigerian Regiment of 3rd West African Brigade, who were literally cutting steps out of the hillside, because the hills were so steep and even the mules couldn't go up them, and also because of the rains. They were like slides. I didn't make contact with the Nigerians. The patrol didn't make contact with the Nigerians, but we ran into a couple of ambushes. Then we laid our own ambush, a couple of ambushes, with the Japs, who were literally sitting on the road and railway up to Mogal. That's right, up to Mogal. We were then ordered back to the block, and I was joined by a Captain Kershaw of the King's Own Regiment, who was also out on a fighting patrol with a Lieutenant Hart as his second command. He then took command of the two platoons, and we were making our way back to the Nam Quin, back to Blackpool. I'd like to tell a story here. He then sent me back to the Nam Quin Chowne to look for a crossing. I came literally crawling through elephant grass and lantana bushes to the Nam Quin Chowne. And the other side of the chowne, which must have been about 30 yards wide, was the enemy rustling about. So we all took, lined up on the chowne there, don't fire until I let you know, give the order. And all of a sudden there was a movement, green, fire, so we fired, they fired back. And then a very English, very cultured voice on the other side, talking to his governor's commissioned officer in Burmese, asking him what was the state of his ammunition left. And it turned out he was a Burma Rifle officer, Captain Tony Gowan, who we were firing at. Anyways, ceasefire. I ran across the river, embraced Tony, and we sat down and we counted what the casualties might have been, and it turned out one of my men had been shot in the heel of his boot, which was pretty bad going, considering we were aiming at each other. But I think just the excitement, tired, weary, it wasn't a very good thing anyway. Poor Tony died 2 years ago of a tumor of the brain. I'm in touch with his widow. Yes, that was quite a battle. Tony was, but none of us was hurt. It was a standing joke in the battalion for many months after that. Anyway, back to Kershaw. Gowan gave us covering fire, which we didn't need. We crossed this Namkun Chowm, and all of a sudden, out of Blackpool were coming. The Japs had overrun Blackpool, or they were evacuating Blackpool. And we helped with the wounded, we built stretchers, we carried, and as a matter of fact, we carried wounded. There were some really brave men there. There was a sergeant there who had a pair of boots on his hands. And he was wounded in both legs, which were dragging behind him, and he just pushed himself up the hills with his Tommy gun slung, giving orders, telling blokes to all-round defense at night, ration, the marvelous chap. And
in his book, The Road Past Mandalay, John Masters gives quite a horrific account of the evacuation from Blackpool.
Yes, and I read The Road Past Mandalay again recently, and it scared the life out of me, because at the time I was scared. But had I known what John Masters knew at that time, I'd have been much more scared, because as a young lieutenant, you're only concerned what's in front of you. But he gives overall picture, and really, it did frighten me. I was talking to Brigadier Scott about that there, because Scotty was there as well. I said, had we known what the overall situation was like, they'd be more or less around. We'd have been really scared. But you know, all you are, platoon commander, you cover that water point, and we covered it, and don't move. Yes, I read it again.
The horrific conditions under which the fighting took place.
Oh, yes. It was a nightmare, and even till today, don't remember all the details. One, after it was 40 years, you forget. But I know the conditions were, and it started to rain rather early in the year, slipping and sliding. Even in the block itself, we couldn't go from post to post, or even visit anybody. It was an ordeal to leave. Then your boots got full of that mud and clay. They were dead and dying on the. In the water, because the Japs were coming in through the water, the stream. And I don't know whether they do it on purpose, but there were dead bodies in the water. And that's it. We were taking the water. We had to take the water from there. Ammunition was at a premium, yes. I know my second command, Subedar Tadikwa, myself were continually on the scrounge for 303 ammunition and Sten gun ammunition and Tommy gun ammunition and hand grenades. But as John Masters described in his book, and he is a man of letters and words, yes, it was horrific. But one can forget as a young man, these things you put just, and as a soldier, it just went after.
But I remember. How much did you see of Masters at Blackpool?
He got around a bit, I must say. Wherever they were fighting was, John Masters was. He came along. And with his brigade staff, when I say staff, about three or four, usually the signals officer, intelligence officer. Yes, he got around. He was everywhere. He was, I know, my first defense was on the aerodrome defense. And the Japs were literally coming across the aerodrome, bayonets fixed. And the Bofa guns were firing on open sites across the Blackpool aerodrome. And yes, John Masters would turn up. And of course, talk to the company commanders or battalion commanders who were there. Yes, he was pretty good. Pretty good, he was. He got around a bit. But I remember mainly Brigadier Scott, who was then Lieutenant Colonel Scott of the King's Regiment, and Lieutenant Colonel Thompson, who incidentally is dead now. They were two who really, right up to the front, right up to the sentry, where the sentries were, literally, would come around and see the men. And when the fighting was taking place, they always were there. Don't ask me how we got a hot meal or what meal, but of course my Karens were absolutely wonderful. Out of nothing, they'd cook something appetizing for me, pick a few branches or a few leaves off the tree, bamboo shoots. They could make something. They were really marvelous, these Karen lads, and always smiling. Or singing hymns or humming hymns, Nearer My God Today, or the old Rugged Cross. I remember that when I hear these old hymns again, I think of those lovely chaps. And then, of course, when the evacuation of Blackpool, and I was with the rear guard over there, we could literally hear the poor, our wounded, who we had to leave behind, being bayoneted, I think, but crying, asking to be killed rather than be left behind. And then when we had to leave them behind, I don't think the Japs were very good to them. And we could literally hear screams. And we, of course, we took it that they were being killed by the Japs. And away we went up this hill, rain. And I think at the top of the hill we had a supply drop, but most of it was free drops. Because if they were landed by parachute, they would sail into the valleys. And the hay for the mules and boots and came flying down, knocking off branches off trees. Frightening, to say the least. But none of us got that, you know, that food, because the whole had to be given to the first, to the sick and wounded. But there again, as I said, my Karens were absolutely marvelous. They'd go and get I had a mess tin of Bovril. I said, where on earth did you get this Bovril from? No, it turned out to be a root of some tree that boiled. It was salt. It was like. So I thereupon sent all my 30 men to go and collect as much roots as possible, and we took it to